More and more of the tribe came up to stand on the bank and observe. Now they could hear the menacing rumble of iron wheels and the harsh voice of the leader shouting orders. Selector number one was no longer in charge, but he was there in the line with his painted on hair and ears. Selector number two marched beside him, distinguished by the wire cage over his head. Other figures had white words scribbled across their black rubbery suits. Many wore studs or chains or metal plates. The leader himself was a great hulking hyper whose suit was painted with pictures of open wounds dripping blood. A steel collar encircled his neck and a black spike stuck out from the top of his skull. Sonda turned to her father.
What do we do? They can't bring that machine into our home ground. They'll flatten the walls and fields and ruin everything.
Neith shook his head.
Keep out of their way. Don't provoke them.
No, we have to explain. Let them stop their machine on the other side of the creek. They can carry the Celestial out there.
Neith remained reluctant, but Zonda grabbed him by the hand.
Come on, we can talk to them, can't we? You and me. You're always calling them fellow allies.
Yes, but... Come on!
Still protesting, Neith went with her. They waded across the creek and came up into the grass on the other side. Zonda didn't like the openness of the plain, but her misgivings were nothing compared to her father's. She could feel his hand trembling in hers as she pulled him along. She was afraid to let go in case he turned tail and headed for home. The hypers and their transport machine were much closer now. The leader barked instructions to the machine as though it could understand and obey. But the language he used was strangely mathematical, a string of numbers rather than ordinary language. In response, the sound from the machine changed to a low as if scolding and muttering to itself. Zonda could see the cylinders and rods that drove the six heavy wheels, but she couldn't see any driver. She led her father up to the leader.
Speak to him, she urged.
Greetings, fellow ally, said Neith.
Not for an instant did the leader break stride. Zonda and Neith were forced to hurry along beside him.
We can show you the best place to wait with your machine, said Neith.
Zonda took over the explanation.
Then we'll lead a couple of your men to collect the Celestial.
The leader looked across to selector number one.
Who are these suckers?
He asked.
Residual crud, came the answer. They belong in this dump.
We just want to help, said Zonda.
The leader dismissed her without a glance.
Rack off!
But you don't know...
The selector number one pointed a black-gloved hand.
Head for that brick wall over there!
The leader barked another string of numbers at the transport machine. Immediately, the wheels veered to the right and the muttering sound accelerated. Now the machine was aiming straight at the dwelling place and the creek was no more than 20 paces ahead. On the other side of the creek, the tribe stared in horror. They seemed paralysed, incapable of moving out of the way.
No! Zonda appealed to the leader. Please, stop! You can't do this!
For the first time, he turned and paid full attention to her. He laughed and showed his pointed metal teeth.
Well, you can do anything, he said.
Zonda's eyes filled with tears of rage and frustration, but she didn't know what else to say. Instead, there came a different kind of answer. From high overhead, a mighty flourish of trumpets rang out, long and deep and golden. As the sonorous, echoing note died away, the hypers halted in their tracks and looked up.
Slag it!
The leader pounded his fist into the palm of his hand. A flock of scummy angels! Slowly descending from above were 30 bright, clear globes. They came down in a V formation, chanting a triumphant battle cry,
Alleluia! Alleluia!
The hypers turned to their leader.
What now? We can't fight all that lot.
The leader was like a baffled beast.
Orderly retreat, he snarled.
He rattled out another sequence of numbers and the transport machine reversed direction and accelerated. It sped across the plain with the hypers racing beside it. Only the leader didn't move. He seemed rooted to the spot by sheer intensity of hatred. His mouth was working and his eyes glaring. He sprayed out a shower of iridescent spittle in the direction of the descending globes. The three leading angels dived down over the transport machine. One after another, they exploded three blinding flashes of light.
Swish, swish, swish.
The dazzle was unbelievable. Even at a distance, it struck like a blow. The leader of the hypers was flung over backwards and knocked Neith and Zonda flat in his fall. For a moment, The world was sheer black and white. Then gradually the colour returned. Zonda moved away, but her father remained sprawling under the leader. Somehow their limbs had got tangled up together.
I'm sorry, Neith bleated pathetically. Sorry, fellow ally, not my fault.
As he tried to extricate himself, the leader sat up. His face was a black, savage mask. He took hold of Neith's left arm and snapped it in one swift movement like a piece of rotten wood.
You stupid knobhead, he said.
He reached out for Neith's right arm and snapped it in the same way.
Stupid,
he said. He caught hold of Neith's thin legs where they stuck out at an angle under his own. This time there was a double crack.
Knobhead,
he said. The transport machine was still rolling across the plain, but most of the hypers had been left behind. They crawled around like worms, rubbing at their eyes with desperate hands.
Blinded! They cried, I'm blinded!
Kicking Neith aside like a limp rag doll, the leader rose to his feet and surveyed the scene. Then he sprinted across to his blinded men. One by one, he grabbed them by the scruff of their necks, yanked them upright, and started them off running in the right direction.
Quick, Manon! Get moving!
They moved at a shambling trot. The leader kicked and cuffed at them from behind.
Faster! Faster!
Soon they were catching up to the transport machine again. The leader barked a mathematical command and brought the machine to a halt. He picked up the blinded hypers and deposited them like sacks of potatoes on the flat trolley top. Then another command, and the machine accelerated forward once more. Now it was travelling at top speed. High overhead, the angels had assembled for another attack. Bright and terrible, they descended. They hovered all together directly above the machine. This time the flashes were simultaneous. It was like the eruption of a thousand suns. Hyper screamed out in agony from the middle of the light. When the dazzle finally cleared, there was a huge patch of white and withered grass. The transport machine was motionless, slewed round at an angle with its rods and cylinders bent and twisted. On top of the machine lay bodies reduced to bleached, stiff corpses. Around the machine, other hypers were squirming as though trying to wrestle with themselves. One seemed to be digging a hole in the earth with his head. They were all in their death throes. But there were two survivors who had managed to dive in under the transport machine before the light hit. One was the leader with his spike and collar and blood-painted suit. The other wore a wire cage over his head. Selector number two, they called out, blinking and squinting. The leader took a brief look at the scene, then wrapped his arms protectively over his head and set off running in the direction of the overbridge. Selector number two ran after him. Their course across the plain was an erratic zigzag as they kept twisting around to stare up at the sky. The angels circled high above, making no further move to attack. They seemed to have decided that sufficient destruction had been done. The two survivors carried out their retreat unopposed, diminishing into the distance. Zonda knelt beside the broken body of her father and wept.